More Business Briefing right now on FM News 101.
It's 4:35 as we continue our conversation with Nitin Kahana, the CEO of MergerTech. He is this weekend's select executive here on Business Briefing. Nitin, thanks for taking time to join us here this weekend. And let's talk about where we're at now in the growth of your former company, Saber. We talked about the growth up through 2002. And up to that point, it sounds like, you know, you were doing okay. Things were good. But right about that time, you started to really experience some exponential growth.
Yeah, you know, we'd always had a mantra of doubling our revenue every year. So right from the get-go in 98, we had $200K in revenue. The next year, we had $800 and then $2.5 million. So we were doing well. And the following year, you know, $6.5 million. And then in 2000, I thought I wasn't the right CEO to run the company, actually. And I brought in a different CEO. Because of the dot-com explosion, we were growing very fast, but other people were growing so much faster than us. We were focused on governments, and they were focused on dot-com. But that was probably the biggest lesson we learned. I was 28 at the time. My brother was 23. We thought we weren't fit to lead the company, and it took 2 years to remove all the executives that the new CEO brought in and then reset on this path of growth that we had prior. So we were flat both years that the new CEO came in. So in 2002, we pick it up again. And this time around, rather than a pure services company, we found that a piece of software, this elections management software that we have, is in high demand by the U.S. The federal government passes a law called the Help America Vote Act that not only provides the states with funding to implement this, but then sets a deadline of January 1 of 2006 to implement it. So a lot of money is going to be flowing to the right player who can implement these. And through a variety of technical reasons, we were really the only solution that worked because other people bought companies that used older software, whereas we built ours from the scratch in line with the law. So even states we weren't winning initially would go through a failed implementation, then we'd go in and re-implement them. And so we literally were, every state we were bidding, we were eventually winning either the first time around or the second time around. So yes, in 2002, we changed course and went from a pure services business to a software and services and also hardware resale business. So we were selling this whole thing as a solution top to bottom and really started seeing explosive growth again. So from 6.5, we went, I think, to 9.5, then 14 million in revenues. And then 24 million in revenues, at which point, I think we're up to 2005, we decided to diversify our risk. So as entrepreneurs, you know, we've now been doing this for 7 or 8 years. While we've been generating good income, all our wealth has tied up in a fairly valuable company, right? It's grown to 24 million in revenues, quite profitable. We were over 20% net profits in the company. And my brother and I made the decision to take some wealth off the table, take some money off the table. We decided to sell to a private equity group because we were still very excited about running the business, just wanted to diversify the risk. Sold half the business at that point in time in December of 2005 to a private equity group called Axel KKR. So that was our first experience with M&A. We'd had offers before, and we'd talked to people before, and we'd even gone down the aisle before, but we'd always left right before we said, you know, I do. So this time through, we actually went through, sold half the company, great partners, Axel KKR. We couldn't have asked for better growth partners.
Sure.
3 months later, we turned around and we bought a business. We bought the public sector business of a company called Covansis. What they provided us were other software like elections. So DMV, unemployment insurance, you know, health and human services. Again, places where citizen interacted with the government, where we had a fabulous reputation. They had great software, but a horrible implementation reputation. And so the parent company wanted to get rid of this public sector division. We bought it. It was a massive turnaround effort, I'll tell you. Brian, we bought the company. We had 660 employees from them the day we bought it. We were only 300 employees. So we're taking on a business twice as big that's smaller than us in revenues, that has 10% win rate on sales. We have about 60 or 70% win rates. They're losing 20%, we're making 20%. So a real mess. We had to let go 300 employees the day we acquired the company. And so it was a huge bet that we made. And what gave us the confidence to make that bet was the private equity partner we'd brought in who said, you know what, you guys are young guys, both under 30, but we trust you to kind of go through and grow this. So we acquired that division. And after 6 months of just basically 24 hours a day of work, we're able to very nicely integrate that business into us. And so now we're talking about December of 2006. But one very significant thing happened, which was that our main bet that we'll win more contracts because of having the software worked out. So we went from winning 60 or 70% of business by ourselves. They went from winning 10% of their bids by themselves to us winning 93% of our bids in 06 and 100% of everything we bid in 2007, which anybody who's ever worked in the government space knows it's not even possible really to win 100% of your business. So that worked out very well for us, that acquisition. Again, showing the power of mergers and acquisitions. So here we've sold half the company, taken about $20 million off the table. We got about a $40 million valuation and sold half the company. Turned around and bought another company, managed to, you know, merge it into our company. So that year in 2006, we grew revenues to $59
million. Amazing.
From $24 million, yep.
So and so you mentioned too, you kind of sold off in pieces too. I mean, you yep. sold and you got bigger and better and yep. you knew what you were doing. And this was strategic, I would take it.
Very much so. Once we'd taken our money off the table, the private equity firm had a very good mindset. What they said to us was, look, you guys were probably behaving in a much more risky manner when you first started the company. You were more, not risky, but you were way more aggressive. You go after bigger things. You're not afraid of so many things. And they said, look, by letting you take this money off the table, we believe that you guys have the ambition that you're not going to go sit on the beach with $20 million. Because remember, a lot of financial firms will think the opposite. If I give this 28, 29-year-old kid $20 million bucks, they're going to go sit on the beach, the two brothers. In our case, they, in talking to us, knew we really wanted to grow a larger company. And so they said, well, we'll think about this in reverse. We'll give you enough money that you're comfortable, even if Sabre blows up. And now let's do something really big with this. So our goal was to try and to get $1 billion in revenue in the next 5 years. Was the joint goal of the private equity group and ours. And so acquisitions, of course, play into that goal. But what happened in January of 2007, Brian, is I looked around at the world and I thought things were crazily expensive. As we come to find out in 2008, you know, that's another one of our lucky breaks, so call it intuition was correct or that my gut was correct. I was talking to my mom, who had bought a home in India a year prior, and she said that the next door house to her sold but three times as much in a year. And then I picked up the newspaper the same day after talking to my mom, and I read that this Hermes Birkin handbag, which cost at least $8,000, was the minimum price, $8,000 to $20,000. 3 years out, you couldn't even get it. You know, and Ferraris were a two-year waiting list. And I just like reading the Wall Street Journal and talking to people and going, it's insane how expensive things are. And I thought maybe the time for us came to sell the whole company as well, because it could be that even companies were very, very expensive. And that turned out to be true. And so we went to our board and our private equity group and said we should sell the company. And they said, absolutely not. You guys are growing from 59 to 90 million this year. We're going to be a $1 billion company. And I think it took us 3 months to convince them that assets are just so expensive that even if we grow the firm tremendously, we may not get as much for it as if we sold it in 2007. And so eventually they heard us out. And we sold the business to EDS. We sold 93% of it to EDS for $420 million in December of 2007. I bet you 6 months later, we couldn't have sold it for anything to anyone, middle of 2008. As you remember, we had the big financial crisis and M&A dried up. So that was another one of those bets that we made at exactly the right time. My brother and I retained 7%. We sold 93%. The private equity group sold everything and went on to work for EDS. And, 4 months later, HP bought EDS, and the way HP wanted to run the company wasn't how we wanted to run the company, and so at that point, we had sold the remaining 7% and left. But in this year and a half, we'd done four more acquisitions, so ended up having a tremendous amount of experience, basically 8 M&A transactions in a two-year period. But we saw the power of M&A, right, Brian? We took a company that was valued $40 million in December of 2007 and sold it for a value of $460 million in December of 2007, so just in 24 months. The power of M&A was tremendous.
That is amazing. And you've parlayed that now with your new company and your new venture, MergerTech. And I know we've only got about a minute before we hit the break, but just give us a little taste of what your vision is with MergerTech.
Yeah, and so these things tie together. The fact that we did those 8 M&A transactions at that point, we realized that there was a real opportunity in the market for a bank that focused solely on small and medium technology firms and did nothing but help them sell themselves to the best strategic bidder. And that's basically what MergerTech does now, and I can get into it in a little bit of detail in a second. But we're basically helping entrepreneurs with technology companies that are less than $100 million in revenue get the best buyer.
Yeah, I'm anxious to talk to you about that. We saw the big news this week about Puppet Labs. Not sure if you followed that closely.
Yes, very much so. Luke Kenney's the CEO. There's a friend of mine, and congratulations to them.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that, and we'll spend more time in our next hour on that story, because that's a big one for the local tech community. If you're just joining us, stay with us as we move toward the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Our select executive this weekend is none other than Nitin Kahana from Merger Tech. We'll talk to him about his involvement now in the local and national tech community to help companies like his former company grow and sell themselves. He's also investing a lot of the money that he made back into the local community, not only financially, but his expertise as well. More with Nitin Kahana when we continue here on Business Briefing.